Falcons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. Joining me as always, Daniel Cox.
Hey.
And we are lucky enough to be joined this week by Coy Wire, former Falcon and current... Gosh, you do everything these days, don't you, Coy?
Well, I just, like they say in football, the more you can do, right?
Yeah,
the more you can do, so I
true.
Just keep moving. That's my aim. Just keep moving, keep progressing. You
and,
know me.
And you are definitely doing that. You did a great job this year on the site with the What's Brewing segments. And fans, if you didn't catch that during the season, shame on you. And go look at them on the site. They're great. So, Coy, I wanted to get your thoughts on a wide array of topics as we're in the off season and there's so many different things going on. You got a chance to watch the Falcons up close and personal in 2012, which was a great season. I wanted to get your thoughts on what you think some of the main focuses should be for the Falcons in 2013.
Well, I think the obvious position is the tight end position. A lot of people are talking about that just because of the uncertainty with Tony and the amount of production that he gave to the Falcons this year. And, so I think that's an intriguing position to look at. But also, I think the trenches. You can never go wrong in the trenches. You look at the teams who succeed year in and year out and who make it to the big game and the big show. They're really good at protecting their quarterback. And they also just have a really beefy, dominant front on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that would be an obvious place to look for this year's draft for the Falcons as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Daniel and I have we talked about that last week. Just how important it is. And we'll talk about Tony here in a little bit. If he doesn't come back, finding that guy who can still be a weapon in that passing game. For Matt Ryan.
Hey, Coy.
Coy. The tight end position is just, obviously, the evolution of that position has been tremendous over the past several years. You're getting these big, tall, lanky, athletic guys. But it just makes sense because in a league now where younger quarterbacks are starting to take over, the tight end is always the closest throw, the closest receiver to the quarterback. The safest, easiest throw often is to the tight end position. So I think that's a factor.
Mm-hmm. Last week we wrote about Zach Ertz from Stanford, the tight end on our draft spotlight. He's the guy that you saw a couple of times with some of your work with, was it the Pac-10 or are they the Pac-12 now? I don't even know.
Pac-12 network, right?
Yeah, the network out there.
That's right.
He's a 6'6", 252-pound guy, kind of a big guy, a big target. He's an All-American. They talk about his hands and, maybe some surprising athleticism. I was curious what, some of your observations were of him, watching him a couple of times this season.
Well, just as you said, he's a big athlete. He's 6'6", 260, and just looks really good out there on the field as an athletic being, right? He's not laborious. He's fluid. He flows. As you mentioned, when I was out there for the Pac-12 networks, I got to cover two Stanford games this year. And I got to go out on Thursdays, watch him in practices, on Fridays, watch him on their walkthroughs. And he just really jumps out at you. I think he'll be a great catch for whoever ends up getting him. I know he's going to be at the top of the list. I think that the way they utilized him at Stanford is going to be intriguing to the Falcons because, as we know, Tony being the receiving tight end that he is, this guy was split out in the slot often, out in space often because he can run such great routes, and he could just really move. He had 66 receptions, 837 yards, 6 touchdowns. And the thing that's interesting about this stats, you look at the guy Tyler Eifert, the guy from Notre Dame that everyone else is talking about also, and he won the Mackey Award, I believe it's called the Mackey Award, to the best tight end in the nation. But if you look at the stats comparisons, Zach Ertz has 66 receptions to Tyler Eifert's 44. He had 837 yards to Tyler Eifert's 624. 6 touchdowns for Zach Ertz. 3 of those were tying or winning touchdowns versus top 15 teams. three of the top 15 teams. So, I mean, this guy can really play, and he can play on a big stage against big-time opponents.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you as a former linebacker yourself and somebody who has had to cover tight ends, in today's NFL, you know, you think about the wide receiver position and everybody's going to the vertical game, but, you know, you see with guys like Tony, with guys like Vernon Davis, just how important it can be to have a viable option in the passing game at that tight end position. What do you think for a defense, you know, because not every team has one. Not every team has that guy at tight end that they can use as an outlet. From a defensive standpoint, you know, how different is it for a linebacker to prepare for facing a guy who can catch passes as opposed to teams that don't have that luxury of having a tight end that's worth anything in the passing game?
Well, it's incredibly difficult from a schematic standpoint because you have to account for a third guy, even in base personnel. I mean, you're not able to just stack up and double up on the wide receivers. You have to give attention to that tight end position. And when you can't, then you're in a one-on-one situation as a linebacker. And these guys are just so big and athletic that, I mean, I'm not a big guy. We all know that. But even when I was pretty good at covering tight ends. And I would be in practice covering Tony, and I'd be right on him. You know, like white on rice, you know, and I could say that because I'm part Japanese, but anyway, I would be all over him, and then all of a sudden he'd come out of a break, and he gets just enough extension out of that break that when you have a quarterback like Matt Ryan, you can put it on the dot. There's just no way. I mean, there's just absolutely no way that you have a chance. And so I think what's interesting from a defensive standpoint is we're going to have to watch. Keep an eye on the evolution of the defensive players who have to cover the tight end who have evolved. You have these big, tall, lanky guys who can really run, and they're strong, they can jump. And I think you have to start to see teams that find a guy who can cover them in one-on-one situations with like athletic ability. So a linebacker who's taller and lankier, or a safety who is a lot taller and lankier than we're used to. It'll be interesting to see if those positions evolve to be able to match and counter the tight end position.
So do you see, you were a former safety and you made the switch. So you had that coverage background. Do you see, and certainly, you know, guys go through high school and they play a multitude of positions. They go through, you know, Pop Warner and all that stuff. And I mean, I think even Matt Ryan was an offensive center, like when he was a kid. So we've certainly seen, you know, you play a wide range of positions. But you know, having that safety background, I'm sure help when you're tasked with covering linebackers, tight ends as a linebacker. But do you see an answer to that being, you know, hey, maybe you get your linebackers a little bit more coverage work. Maybe, you know, you cross train them at different positions. I don't know what is the answer to being able to cover tight ends like Tony, like Vernon.
Well, I think what a lot of teams are doing more now than in the past is taking a guy who used to be a safety, making them bulk up a little bit and be able to come down into the box and either be a full-time linebacker or line up as a linebacker often. So, I mean, it started kind of with Pat Tillman and Adam Archuleta. Remember those guys out of Arizona State? And then, of course, that's kind of what I did. But you see more guys at the linebacker position now who are former DBs or who played safety or have the ability to do so. So I think that that's absolutely a way to combat that offensive weapon.
Corey, do you feel like, you know, and Jay and I talked about this on the podcast last week about it seems like it's, you know, it's an offensive league now, you know, it's quarterback driven, and, you know, you see wide receivers coming in with the skill set like a guy like Julio Jones has, and then, you know, the evolution of the tight end. Do you feel like it's the NFL's in a position now and it's, you know, evolution, I guess you can say, of it's the opportunity for the defense now to kind of evolve and, you know, make those adjustments, like you mentioned, with you moving safeties around. Do you feel like it's kind of the onus is now on the defenses to really come up with some creative and innovative things to kind of combat what some of the offenses are doing?
There's no question. I mean, defense, the only time you're in an attacking mindset, it really is when you're blitzing. But even then, you're reactive, right? To plays throughout the game, to even when it comes to strategizing for an upcoming game, you need to be reactive to what you think the offense is going to do. So when it whether it's schematic or from an ideology standpoint, all the way to the physical standpoint, defenses are going to have to react to what these offenses are becoming. I mean, certain positions are just changing. I mean, you look at the quarterback position right now. Now you have to account for an 11th man who normally has traditionally, I should say, has been a sitting duck, right, that can throw the rock. But now you have a guy who your defensive ends better be able to play the read option. Your linebackers better be able to track down an elusive quarterback who could take off and run at any time. So, and then when you talked about Daniel at the receiver position, I mean, look at these guys now. I mean, they're just a completely different breed, a completely different species. I always say how Julio, I'll never forget when he came in as a rookie. I mean, he looks like one of those characters from the movie Avatar. I mean, you know, just like this big, huge, lengthy, strong athlete that can just move like a leopard. And I mean, it's just absurd what they're able to do now. And so you have to think that defenses are going to have to respond by finding the guys who can match that type of athletic specimen and skill set. So look for corners to start to become bigger, stronger, lengthier, guys like that who can go toe-to-toe with a guy like Julio Jones or Calvin Johnson.
Is that also where you get a guy like Croy Bierman, and who can do anything you ask him to do? And we saw it especially this past year. You know, you ask him to be a pass rusher, he can do that. You ask him to have his hand in the dirt, he can do that. You ask him to stand up, you ask him to cover, he can do anything you ask him to do. Are we really, with the read option being what it is, and you know, I guess time will tell if that ends up being a fad or the new direction. But for a defense to have a guy like that who, you know, the quarterback never really knows what that guy is going to be doing on any particular play, how important is that from a defensive standpoint to trying to get maybe a little bit of an edge against an offense like that?
I think it's schematically a great advantage. If you look the way they used Croy this year, they were really able to do some things to screw with the opposing quarterbacks. I mean, they made top flight quarterbacks look like flops, from Drew Brees to both Mannings. I mean, you look at what these guys were the way they were performing against the Falcons. A big part of that was because of the diversity in scheme and that amoeba-like defense that Coach Nolan was able to put on the field. And it was because of guys like Croy Bierman, who could line up on one side and rush the passer, or he could line up off the ball or drop back into a deep middle third. I mean, it just gives you so much freedom from a scheme standpoint to disguise. And disguise is huge. I mean, that's the only way you're going to have an edge over a quarterback like a Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, Peyton Manning, who can read defenses at the with the best of them. You have to be able to disguise, or you're completely screwed, because every defense has a weakness, mm-hmm. whether it's cover two and it's the sweet spot out there on the edges, or cover three, which is four verts up the field. If a quarterback knows what defenses are in, they know where the weakness is and they know who to target. So to be able to disguise with hybrid type athletes, with athletes who are able to move around and give you a variety of looks, is a huge advantage.
Hey, Coy, I want to jump back to the draft. I wanted to get some of your thoughts on one of my favorite events, the NFL Combine, which is going to get cranked up next week in Indianapolis, Indiana. You know, you've been through that process. Can you just kind of talk about your experience with, you know, the preparation for the Combine and, you know, the Combine itself, and what it's like for a player, a young guy especially, to go in there? It's like it's a job interview, but like Jay and I were talking about last week, it's a job interview, you know, every hour almost. You know, you're talking to the team so much, and you're doing your performances on the field, you're training and performing that way, but you're also meeting with teams in meeting rooms and, you know, head coaches and you guys that you've heard about and read about in the past. And, you know, it seems like kind of an overwhelming experience could be for some guys.
It's a surreal experience. There's no question about that. I mean, there's no experience like it. I mean, they call it a meat market or a cattle show, and it is like that. I mean, you go in there and you get measured every which way and weighed, and you get tested, and walking around with your shirt off, people just looking at you like, you know, you're a piece of meat, and really you are. And so it's just a very surreal experience, but. You talked about the preparation, and I think most guys obviously realize this is the job opportunity and interview of a lifetime. So they do test you mentally with the Wunderlich test, and they ask you questions much like a traditional job interview. You sit in a room with the coaches and the GMs, and but then there's also obviously the physical test. So preparation is key. I've seen some guys who... they know it's important, but they kind of rest on their laurels. They maybe take a loan from their agent. They start spending money they don't even have yet. They start living that life like they've made it to the NFL because they're pretty sure they're going to make it. And you know what? They're probably not as focused as they should be. Then you have the other guys who just are the complete opposite. They drop everything. They want to be, as Coach Smith says, zoom focus on their goal and the task at hand. And that's kind of what I had to do. I mean, I had to give myself every edge and that I could, because I wasn't the biggest, fastest, strongest. So I kind of went with the extreme with it and locked myself up in an apartment, and I was so focused on my goals and determined to get those things that I had to sacrifice quite a bit.
You know, I want to get your take on what you think is the most important part of the combine, because you know, you watch the networks and everybody's focused on the 40. And I don't know where that came from, but everybody is so focused on that 40. And you know, even Rich Eisen's going to run his. Yep. Daniel and I are going to run ours here pretty soon. I don't know how that's going to go. But, you know, everybody's so focused on that 40. But to me, I look at the whole thing as I think there are a couple of different things that make this so important for guys. And I look at the interviews that Daniel just mentioned, the 15 minutes or so that they get to, you know, teams get to kind of test character and talk to a guy and get to know him. But I think the medical evaluations are huge, and also more of the position work that you see. You know, there's a reason why the linebackers work out together and the defensive linemen work out together, so they can go through all these different position drills. And this is just me. I'm not a coach. I've never been a coach, but I would think that you would get more out of seeing a guy maybe do some of those drills, see, you know, footwork, hips, all that stuff, as opposed to how fast can you run 40 yards in spandex. Am I right in that, or how do you see that, Coy?
Yeah, I think that the general public has more fun and the media has fun with the 40 times. It's that iconic stat or event, if you will, at the combine that people love to talk about. But it is important to scouts, but they know how fast you are. I mean, they flip on that game film and they can see whether or not this guy can run. That's easy to see when he's on the football field, and you hear that often referred to as football speed, right? And these coaches and GMs, these scouts, they know if you have it or if you don't. They'll look at the 40 time, obviously, take it into consideration, but they know whether or not you can go. But I think you're absolutely right with just seeing the fluidity of an athlete, seeing him move in an isolated environment, especially if it's a guy who maybe didn't play against the greatest competition in college. And so you want to see, was it just because he was playing against inferior competition, or can this guy really move? What kind of creature is he? Let me see him move in shorts. And so I think that is absolutely, it's vital. And the interviews are not to be overlooked either, because you get the guys to take that helmet off and you look them in the eye and you're asking the type of questions that will help to reveal his character. And I think that is vital.
So you mentioned a good point in you know, looking at these guys from the drill standpoint, and especially these guys who, you know, played D1 AA or whatever they're calling it these days, or D2, you know, you hear all the time, oh, this team lucked out with so-and-so, or, you know, wow, you know, what a lucky pick that was. But yeah. I don't buy that's luck. I mean, this is what these guys do, the scouting staffs. I mean, they've been working during the football season to look at these guys, and then they come together in Indianapolis, and then they see these guys, and they see the little things, the footwork, and all the various tangible assets that they're looking for in players. And, you know, maybe they see something that, you know, somebody else doesn't see, yeah. and you end up with a seventh-round steal. And you talk about that all – we hear that all the time, is that, oh, teams got lucky. But I think this is – I mean, this is really where – you know, this is your scouting staff season
yeah.
right now, and is to go into the combine and really kind of take everything that they've seen over the past few months and kind of apply it to that one person in the short amount of time that you get them.
Yeah, just as they're the pro football players, there are the good ones, but then there are the really good ones. It's the same thing with these scouts and the GMs. There are the good ones, but then there are the really good ones who really know how to identify talent. And you'll hear Thomas Dimitroff talk about suddenness. They can spot players who have this suddenness, this sense of urgency about them with their physical movements, but then also being able to find the guys who have that suddenness off the field when it comes to the passion behind their purpose, to see what type of character these players have. And if you look even way back to New England when Dimitroff was there and some of the guys that they were able to, like you say, get lucky and find, they're able to identify talent and character. Those guys who have the work ethic, the guys who, when they get some money in their pocket, aren't going to change. They're going to continue to be hungry and be of great value to growing to a team and to building a championship team. So I think that's one of the things that Thomas Dimitroff and the staff that he's put together, they're one of the great teams. I mean, you look at what they've been able to do over the past several years, and then even from a strategy standpoint, bringing in Tony Gonzalez and look at what type of decision that turned out to be, and then going ahead and making a move to draft Julio Jones, and then going out and finding somebody who they all said was over the hill and headed down to the gutter in Asante Samuel and how valuable he was. They're so good. They're not good. They're great at finding talent, to finding the guys with the physical and mental abilities.
Yeah, and I think that's the true test of that is when you see other teams come in and want to take guys away from you. We saw it this year, Dave Caldwell going to Jacksonville. Les Snead the year before going to St. Louis, and you know, two guys that worked their way up underneath Thomas and went on to become GMs themselves. I think that's the ultimate measuring stick there. But Coy, we want to ask you real quick before we let you go here. You're a personal friend of Tony Gonzalez. We've talked about him a little bit here. Everybody wants to know what he's going to do. We're not looking for any inside information, though, wink, wink. But, you know, what's your prediction? How do you kind of feel, you know, where he's at and what he's going to do and just what he's kind of meant to the organization in his 4 years here?
I think his leadership by example is unmatched, probably in the history of the game. And just so valuable to have the young guys and even some of the veterans who were part of this organization be able to, and that includes me, to be able to watch a guy like that in practice and before practice and after practice, a guy who didn't have to continue to work but always did. And then it just makes sense. You know what? Hard work is worth it, right? I mean, he's the prime example of that. So he's been invaluable over the past several years to this organization. He's going to leave a legacy here for many years. And I think that when it comes to next year, it really depends on what Tony has waiting for him after football. I mean, I know that he has other life goals. You know, he loves football. He's passionate about football, but there are other things about which he's passionate. And I think that he's at the point now where he's trying to decide if it's time to take steps towards those other interests and those other passion. So I know what I hope he chooses, and I know a lot of people hope he chooses. And let's all continue to hope. They say that collective prayer works. So I think maybe if we all just kind of say a prayer every morning, every night, have Tony come back, maybe he'll sense those vibes and we can coerce him into coming on back to Atlanta for one more year.
Hey, we can will it into existence, I think, is...
I like it.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. You see it, you can believe it, right?
Speaking of willing into existence, I want to know who has the greater will to become champion of what I hear is going to be an epic battle between two soldiers, Jay Adams and Daniel Cox, when they have their combine this year. I mean, this thing is already being talked about, whispered about on just about every street corner in Atlanta, waiting to see who has what it takes in 2013 to rise up.
You know, I really think this is going to be a big year for me, Coy. I'm going to be honest with you. I know my chances of beating Daniel in pretty much anything are going to be very low. However, I go into it looking to beat myself. And last year I beat myself because I went from, I think my 40 time was like 6'4". I went down to, what, a 6'2", something like that?
Yeah, it was 6'1", just over 6.
Look, I'm a little leaner this year, a little more trim, been working out, hitting the gym, not making jokes about it this time where I've been training for 5 minutes. I've actually been, I've done a little bit of work here in the off season. So,
well, let me tell you this, Jay. Uh-huh. I love your perspective, your philosophy on how you can become great. I want you to take a pencil, pen, write this quote down. This quote epitomizes what you just said.
Okay.
He who conquers 1,000 men 1,000 times is nothing compared to he who conquers himself.
Whew. Daniel, you don't stand
a
chance.
Daniel, I was leaning towards you, man, but after I'm hearing Jay talk, I think he's got that elusive it that many people seek.
Well, here, you know, Jay and I know last season we discussed it frequently, and we talked a lot of trash to each other. I don't think he and I have mentioned it except in passing, like maybe 4 times in the year since. So, you know, I've kind of done some preparation as well. See, I'm not going to talk about it.
This is why. This is why. It's because we've been so focused on it for the last year that we haven't talked about it to each other because we don't want to give away an edge.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel good about my chances in any event that we do this
See,
year.
The thing that wow. Daniel's got on his side is that he's got the Chuck Taylors. Are you going to run in the Chucks this
I don't
year?
Know. I mean, that turned out to be a bad idea.
Turned
last year.
As in ankle. Because those were.
It was pretty close.
They say look good, feel good, play good. Good.
There you go.
Yeah, he looked good. Yeah. I don't know about his
ankle. Felt good, but afterwards, that was.
There were a couple
awful.
Of days afterwards where Daniel was like, you know what? I can't come today because I can't get out of bed.
Yeah. That's my goal last year was to avoid an injury. I did not do that. I did, you know, I edged Jay out in most of the, in all of the categories.
All. You swept it.
I swept you it. Swept it. That will be my goal again, to avoid an injury. And in my preparation, that is what it's been all about. Just, you know, just building the body up just to, you know, take care of this 30-minute event.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you guys have almost what it sounds to be a vow not to talk trash. Because, you know, those who talk trash have breath that smells like hot garbage. So we don't need any of that. We need you guys both to save your breath, save all the talk. I want you both to be so prime, focused, and ready so we can get a true gauge on who the real champion, who has the real mind of a champion when it comes time for battle.
Yeah, you know what? I think this is our year, Coy, because we've been draft eligible here for 3 years. And,
and nothing has happened.
Nobody's called our number. But I think this could be the year because I think mentally we're prepared. We've got the experience. We've got that fire,
well,
too.
You know, people didn't really start taking me serious as an athlete until I shaved my head. So,
see?
Hey, I shaved my head in the summer. My hair grew back.
I know a guy. I'm just saying.
I'm definitely probably going to shave the beard.
It's aerodynamic.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's what it's all about.
Did you just... Did you just say you're definitely probably going to shave your beard?
Yeah, definitely probably.
Definitely probably.
Put that in the 50-50 category.
It's a definite probability. Definite probability.
I like it.
Well, Coy, thanks so much for joining us today and lending your insight into all these topics that are facing the Falcons. You know, I'm sure we can check you out on the radio. You're still doing radio. What do we got for you in the off season?
Yeah, I do radio once or twice a week here with 790 The Zone right now. And then I also did my first reporting assignment as a contributor for CNN. So it's been an incredible, incredible rookie season for me in my broadcasting career. And I'm just going to apply the same principles. Work hard, study harder. It's always worked. So I'm hoping it continues to work in this new world as well.
Well, when you're hosting one of the you know, Monday Night Football pregame shows, I hope you remember Daniel and I.
I will. How could I forget? How could I forget? And I look forward to doing more with you guys too. We're just getting warmed up over there. Let's rise up, but let's keep rising higher.
That's right. That's right. More from Coy Wire in 2013. Thanks so much again, Coy, and we'll catch up with you again.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Coy.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. So let's wrap it up here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Real quick with a topic or a more of a segment that we brought up last week,
right,
basically
right.
on the fly from the seat of our pants.
That's okay.
And
that's
how we do things around here. I mean,
by the way, we spend the rest of our time preparing for the combine.
That's right. By the way, great talking to Coy. I mean,
yeah, that was awesome.
That was excellent insight. But anyways, let's get on to the most interesting thing that we heard this week. We've got Rob in here. We got to get some kind of like music for this. The most interesting thing we've heard all week, and then like, boom, some kind of sound effect or something like that. Let's see what we can find. I don't know.
Like a gavel slamming down.
Something that like really explains the gravity of this moment because of all the wonderful. Insightful information that's going to come from us within the next couple of minutes here. So,
okay,
well, are you going to lead it off?
I'm going to lead it off.
You look like you're cock-locked and ready to roll.
Yeah, I'm ready. Coy mentioned 790 The Zone. That's the Falcons' flagship radio station here in Atlanta. They do some good stuff, and you know it's the off season, so we don't hear from players too often. Asante Samuel joined 790's Dave Archer and Mike Bell, the Archer and Bell show, something like that. Those are good guys. Last week, Annie had some good things to say. Talked about the off season for the Falcons, and he anticipates more growth. And for him, just from his perspective, he was pleased with his first year in Atlanta. He felt like Coach Nolan and the new scheme coming in, he was happy with the ability for everybody on defense to kind of come together and have that camaraderie, that strong locker room that he's definitely experienced in some places like New England and even in Philadelphia. You know, he said his shoulder, which kind of nagged him, and that's what I loved about Asante. You know, down the stretch in the season, his shoulder was clearly bothering him, but he continued to go out there and play. You said, you know, it affected him. It definitely hurt, but he compensated and just did his best to go out there and, hope to not hurt the team. I don't think he ever wanted that, so he just went out there and played his best. He did say that he felt like it was perfectly okay, as he said. It was a tough injury to play through, and he's coming back from that. This was a post from our very own Jay Adams on our own AtlantaFalcons.com, of course. So
make sure you check that guy out.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, next week, maybe in 2 weeks,
pretty all right.
I'm going to be competing against him, so he won't be one of my great friends. But
for 30 minutes,
yeah, and then afterwards we'll go have a great lunch,
right?
But there was a poll on there, and Asante Samuel, his first year grade with the Falcons, and this is voting from the fans, A, B, C, D, and F were the options. 58% said he got an A, and I can agree with that,
yeah.
I think. I'd say it's an A+, and Coy mentioned him as well, and I felt like it was one of those great moves that Thomas seems to make every single offseason, bringing in a guy like that.
And you mention it from both sides of it, the on-field stuff. And we talked during the season about how gritty and tough we thought this guy was when he's dealing with this injury, which, like you said, was clearly bothering him. It kept him out of practices, kept him out of games at some points. But when he played with that injury, I mean, you could tell that it was bothering him, but it did not seem to affect his play at all. Mm-hmm. You're talking about – you know, a Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champ, you know, a guy who has been around, and a shoulder injury is not going to keep him from playing the game. And so he was just phenomenal this year. And I think the effect, you want to talk about the attitude that the defense came with every week. I say you look no further than him, because he's the guy who helped bring it. And, you know, you heard that word swagger all the time, and he brought it, and the defense adopted it.
Yeah. There are a few guys that have more swag and, you know, all that than Asante Samuel.
Right. You're one of them, though.
Oh, for real?
No, I'm just kidding. All right, so let's get on to that was a good one.
Thank you.
That was one of mine, so I appreciate it. I'm going to use one of mine, too. So
all right. I don't blame you, Jay.
But today, the USA Today released its All-Joe team, and this is honestly one of my favorite teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every year, they've been doing this since 1992, and the All-Joe team, saluting the average Joes in the NFL. And, you know, we hear all the time about how the Pro Bowl is a popularity contest, mm-hmm. and, you know, All-Pro, I think, is a much more accurate representation mm-hmm. of, you know, who is actually performing the best at their positions. But still, you end up with some snubs. But, you know, I think this was a guy who I thought should have been in the conversation a little bit more for the Pro Bowl. But he landed on the All-Joe team. Sam Baker, named to the All-Joe team for USA Today. And I think well-deserved. He had one heck of a 2012 campaign. Healthy. You know, we talked about Sam a lot.
Yeah.
100% healthy this year. Better weight distribution and all those things that we've heard about Sam all year come to fruition on this All-Joe team. And, you know, good for him to get some recognition for that, because he certainly had one heck of a 2012. And one of the things that I did with this is I asked fans, just like you mentioned with the poll, is besides Sam Baker, who's your most likely All-Joe candidate from 2012? And the results are pretty awesome. Croy Bierman currently in the lead with 33% of the vote. Sean Weatherspoon right behind him. Stephen Nicholas, Robert McClain, Jonathan Babineau, Jaquizz Rodgers, Harry Douglas, and also the anonymous other option available to fans as well. If you go to AtlantaFalcons.com, you can voice your opinion in that poll. But who's yours? Who you got a guy who's you know?
You know what? I have no issue with Sam Baker as the All Joe from the Falcons. I love that pick. You know, and he was one of two guys that played in every single snap this season.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 1,066 snaps. We wrote about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, 1,060 offensive snaps.
Yeah,
him and Justin Blaylock is an Iron Man himself. But every single snap. And that's something that I don't think many people expected out of Sam Baker, based on, you know, some of his health struggles, you know, earlier in his career. So I think that's an outstanding job by him to stay healthy and also perform at a level that's, you know, able to be recognized with like an All-Joe thing. And some of the other guys, Tyson Klebo has been named to that team as far as I can recall, and I know Tom McClure was as well in years past. So great job by Sam Baker, and I can go, you know, I have no issue with saying that's my guy for the All-Joe team from the Falcons.
Sam is totally the guy. Besides Sam, I think there are a couple of guys. I mean, all the guys that are mentioned in the poll were great, but the ones that stood out to me, Bierman, Weatherspoon, Robert McClain.
Yeah, McClain's a guy. McClain, I made my second,
second pick. Yeah, alternate. He had a heck of a year, and especially when you talk about the Brent Grimes injury and the way he stepped up and filled that void, I think was amazing. And we've talked about it, but I think that's something that needs to be talked about more.
Yeah,
that kid,
absolutely.
Absolute steal. Another guy who, you know, you talk about it, hey, you got lucky. But no.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that your scout, that's what you get your scouts to do,
absolutely.
Is find those guys.
And that's a testament to not just that college scouting either. I mean, maybe it is because, you know, Robert McClain may have been on some of these guys in this building's list from mm-hmm. when he came out a couple of years back. But, you know, he'd been playing for one, you know, two seasons already, and they found him and gave him a chance. And, you know, sometimes guys just need a shot like that, and he got his.
He did.
And he played well.
Absolutely did. So there's our most interesting thing that we saw all week. Cue the music / sound effect.
Yeah.
And
ironically enough, both came from our website, which
Well, I mean,
if you're not visiting our website every day,
where else are
out.
Interesting things going to come from?
Especially in the off season,
right? Well, let's wrap it up. Another edition of the Falcon Cast. We thank you for listening, and we thank once again Coy Wire for stopping by, and hopefully we can get him on here a few more times before the draft. And thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week for another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast.